Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The 39th American Indian Film Festival kicks off this Saturday in San Francisco, and the festival will showcase over 70 short films, documentaries, and features by and about Native people. The festival is the world's oldest and best-known exposition dedicated to Native Americans in cinema. As debates over football mascots rage across the country, the American Indian Film Festival works to replace stereotypes with authentic representations of Native traditions, history, and present-day life, and to celebrate and empower Native artists. And joining us to talk about the festival and this year's films are three guests. LaDonna Harris is star of the documentary LaDonna Harris, Indian 101. LaDonna is a Comanche activist and national civil rights leader. In the 60s and early 70s, she educated members of Congress about Native American issues and helped to introduce landmark legislation, including tribal land return claims, improving education and health care for Native Americans, ending job discrimination against women, and protecting environmental resources for tribes. LaDonna is founder and president of Americans for Indian Opportunity, and she works with Indian youth. Hi, LaDonna. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's great to have you. I loved the film, and I'm so glad you're able to join us. We're also joined by Juliana Branham. She's producer and director of LaDonna Harris, Indian 101. Juliana has created a number of films on Native American history, and the film will show Monday, November 3rd at 7 p.m. at the AMC Metreon on 4th Street in San Francisco. Hi, Juliana. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me. Hi, LaDonna.
Hello, Julie.
It's great to have you. And we're also joined in studio by Vincent Blackhot Amat. Vincent is director of Indian Health Center, Culture is Prevention. It is a film about the challenges facing Native youth. Indian Health Center screens Tuesday, November 4th at noon. And Vincent is in studio. Hi, thank you for coming in.
Hey, Rose. Thanks for having me. Hi, Julie and LaDonna.
Hello.
Hi.
Well, it's great to have all of you. So, Juliana, I want to start off with you because I watched your film, LaDonna Harris, Indian 101, and I loved it. And I was really kind of disappointed that I didn't learn about LaDonna in school, considering that she's done so much amazing work in Washington, the one sort of Indian woman, Indian person to educate politicians about Indian issues in the 60s and 70s. When did you first learn about LaDonna?
Well, LaDonna is actually a relative of mine. And while I didn't grow up knowing her, she lived in Washington when I lived in Oklahoma, I had always heard about her, and I would occasionally see her at funerals or a family gathering, but always knew of her importance and that she was sort of legendary with at least our tribe. I didn't really know the extent until I approached her about doing a documentary and learning more about how far-reaching she was.
Vincent, what about you? When did you first learn about LaDonna?
Boy, it's probably been some years back. I mean, you just kind of hear when you're in those circles of activists and people that are really trying to do positive things for the community. You can't help but not hear about these people. You know, so I've known about her for some time now and just always thought, wow, you know, here's someone that's doing something great. And it's nice to see, when I heard about this film, when it was being made, it was like, I was like, oh, great. It's nice to see that something like that's, you know, to get that story out there, like you were saying, you know, why didn't we hear about this person, you know, years ago? And it's films like this that'll help fix that, remedy that problem.
Yeah. LaDonna, what was it like for you to go back in time and tell your story to Juliana?
Well, it was kind of sad in some ways, because I just made me remember all the people that helped me become who I am, and all my, you know, my ancestors and folks along the way who helped me get through some of the issues that I were confronted with. So that kind of brought all those people back in mind, just reminiscing about growing up and who influenced me and how they were, my grandparents in particular. I was raised by my Comanche grandparents, and so I grew up with a good knowledge of the culture, and of Comanche culture, and I think that's the thing that has put me in good stead all along, because even now when I make a decision, I kind of have to run it through my Comanche values in order to decide.
Well, that seems like there's so many themes, obviously, in this film festival, but culture is one of the big themes. Vincent, in your film, you talk to a number of natives about how to get native youth, especially in urban environments, to reconnect to their culture. I mean, and a lot of this is connected to LaDonna's work and all of the amazing things she did and continues to do today.
Yeah, yeah. We were talking about this, a little bit earlier before the show, and it was just, interesting that, the guests we have on here today, and I was just saying, I just see this connection of trying to keep the culture alive, and that's really how you stay on that right path, is with your culture, because like you were saying in my film, it discusses the challenges that Native youth are finding when they're away from their culture, when they're in urban settings, and suddenly they don't know who to connect with, and so they kind of, a lot of them, they get lost, sort of gravitate towards other cultures, the Latino culture or the African-American culture, because they're just trying to connect and be a part of something when they should be connecting with who they are. And so it's very important that we have cultures in our youth, and that they understand it, that they're connected to it, and that they, and like LaDonna was saying, they use that when they're making decisions and choices, that you go back, you fall back on your culture, and you say, wait a minute, is this what I should be doing? In the film, one of the young kids talks about, well, I'm a drummer, I'm a singer, and I can't do that because of who I am, because this is what identifies me.
And also, Juliana, you've made a number of films on Native American history. It's as important to show youth and to teach youth about their history, because so much of this history is either forgotten or completely ignored, or in many cases, it's just whitewashed.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if not the most important, I think, is to educate our youth about their history, where they come from, and give them the broadest, and understanding of it, because what they're learning in school, unfortunately, is way back in history. Contemporary history isn't really acknowledged, which is why a lot of the youth don't necessarily know about LaDonna's story and her contributions. Which are, likely more important than anything, any of the Geronimos or Singles have done. So, and also I feel like the female voice is lacking as well in Native culture, in a lot of the history that we hear. So it's very important to me.
Well, and so LaDonna, I mean, what's so amazing is not only were you a woman in Washington, D.C., educating mostly men about Native American issues, but you were a Native American woman. So, I mean, it was so interesting that, in fact, there's a trailer at yourcallradio.org, and I hope you all can go check that out after the show. You and your husband, Fred Harris, were being interviewed by a journalist who said something about man of the year. Oh, but you're a woman. He just kept saying the word man, but you're a woman. You're educating us about these issues. But let's go back a little bit and talk about your story. So you are married to Fred Harris, and he was an Oklahoma state senator. And then he became a senator in Washington. And I understand you were the first Comanche sort of white couple in Washington, D.C. Is that right?
Yes. That's right. But we were high school sweethearts. I didn't marry him after he achieved things. I put him through law school.
Yeah, that's important to point
now,
out.
But we're good friends. We have a family gathering. We both live here in New Mexico. So we have family gatherings once a month, just to keep our contact with our children who live here as well. So but we married in right out of high school, and he was a freshman in college, and so we really grew up together and went through the experience together. I feel like I always say we went to college, because I felt like I did, because everyone came to our house. He was very smart, and everybody came to our house to study, so I felt like I almost gained as much education as they did, though I worked outside the college.
So talk a little bit about the first experience when Fred became a state senator.
Well, I was the only wife that would go up to Oklahoma City, and and watch what he, because he wanted me to be there to get my reactions to either when he was having hearings or in the Oklahoma State Senate at that time. You could have a chair by, if you were a special guest to a senator, you could have a chair by his desk. And so about every other, about every 2 weeks, I'd go up and spend a week and act as a hostess for, he shared a common setting room with another, with the speaker, pardon me, the president pro tem of the Senate. So I acted as hostess. And we were known, Fred was the youngest state senator, and we were known as Freddie and the Indian. And that was an affectionate term that some of the other senators call me, because I was always there and acting as hostess to them in that common living room.
What was it like for you to sort of be the go-to person on Indian issues at that time?
Well, I learned it back in Oklahoma. We started segregating, they've always segregated African Americans, and so I had a babysitter who was black and who couldn't go to the theater except to the balcony, and they were picketing the theater, and so a group of women got together and started fighting discrimination against African Americans, and then all of a sudden I said, what about Indians? You know, good heavens. And so we started in my living room, and we started the first statewide organization in Oklahoma, Oklahomans for Indian Opportunities. So we were working because at that time Oklahoma was overt discrimination against blacks and kind of covert against Indians. It was kind of like everybody loved to claim they're Indian as long as you weren't too much Indian. And so that it was in the way the teachers taught. They didn't mean to be negative to the students, but just because of their own educational background, we studied teachers because we had 75% dropout rates in Oklahoma. So our children were really suffering, and we did a class where the Indians were the students, the Indian children were the students, with the teachers, and the teachers were the students, and the young people made the teachers cry just repeating what they say to what they heard the teachers say to them. And so it became apparent that there was a lot of insensitivity going on in the in educating teachers. So we changed it from 75% to 35% in Oklahoma and did a whole bunch of things. So I was kind of prepared when I went to Washington because we worked with the University of Oklahoma and had a youth group starting there and there that we called them the OIO babies, Oklahomans for Indian Opportunity. And in Oklahoma, too, you know, we have the Plains tribes like the Comanches and Apaches and Kiowas and Cheyennes. And on the other side were the tribes that were forced into Oklahoma. So we just had a dividing point, and we had to overcome because we were culturally very different than the Woodlands people that were forced into eastern Oklahoma and as Plains people.
And what was it like when you got to Washington? In the film, you talk about how national decision makers knew very little about Indian tribes. In fact, many people on the East Coast thought Indians no longer existed. One high official, who I believe you said is still in office, said, so tell me, can you people vote?
Yes, we ran into that all the time. And you could tell because, well, I think the universities will have to re-examine themselves because unless you have take Indian studies and you don't learn anything through history, our history books aren't about American history. They're about Europeans coming to the Americas. So we don't know, we are not a part of history. And also that we are government. We should be in political science, and government should be taught like that. They're doing better, but still we have. If you wanted to know anything about Indians, you have to take Indian studies. So that's why we called it 101, Indian 101, is because I was so shocked at how little knowledge that people had in Washington. So we found that out in Oklahoma as well. So we we figured out how to do it in a friendly way, not in an angry way. My grandmother said, don't be angry because you lose, they've defeated you. You have to look at them as bless your hearts and try to help them get informed.
Juliana, before we let you go, you are the producer and director of LaDonna Harris Indian 101, and you've created a number of films on Native American history. Can you just talk about the power of films in trying to educate people about these issues? I mean, so much history is still unknown or forgotten, as you know, as we said earlier, but it's just important. I mean, even small things, like LaDonna in the film talked about signs, no Indians or dogs allowed. I mean, we had this in Northern California, and a lot of people just don't know about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, film and video is really the great tool for educating folks these days, and so you know, it's a way to reach the masses, and it's not, you know, the film isn't just, you know, for those students of Native American history. It's I've gotten an incredible response from those outside the non-Native community who go, and they're just blown away because they do sort of get sort of this background history lesson, this Indian 101, so to speak. But then on top of that, they're relating and connecting to this beautiful woman that we all love. And inspires them. It's, you know, LaDonna's a very magnetic, charming woman, and even seeing her on a screen connects you. And so people feel connected, Native and non-Native. So it's a way to really, I think, using film and getting to know sort of that person, you know, through that way is you know, it's a great opportunity for everybody to learn and connect.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and thanks again for making this great film.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm sorry I have to run.
Thank you. That's Juliana Branham. She's producer and director of LaDonna Harris, Indian 101. And we are joined by LaDonna Harris, the star of the film. LaDonna is a Comanche activist and national civil rights leader. In the 60s and early 70s, she educated members of Congress about Native American issues and helped to introduce programs and legislation affecting everything from tribal land returns and improving education to health care for Native Americans and protecting environmental resources for tribes. LaDonna Harris, Indian 101, will be shown at the American Indian Film Festival Monday, November 3rd at 7 p.m. And you can see the film at AMC Metreon on 4th Street in San Francisco. We're also joined by Vincent Blackhot Amont, director of the Indian Health Center, Culture is Prevention. It's a film about challenges facing Native youth. And you can see that film Tuesday, November 4th at noon. The film festival kicks off this Saturday in San Francisco. It runs for a week, showcasing 70 shorts, documentaries, and features by and about Native people. And if you'd like to join us, if you have a question for today's guest, we'd love to hear from you. If you have a comment about Native American history, if you've seen a film that maybe opened your eyes or changed your opinion about an issue, give us a call at 866-798-8255. And I'd love to know, since so many of you are political and longtime people who are involved in issues for a while, have you heard of LaDonna Harris and the amazing work that she's done over the decades? If you have any questions for her, we'd love to hear from you. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or drop us an email. Go to our website, yourcallradio.org. You can leave a comment on our website. Vincent, what is the reaction of youth when they learn about Native history? Like if they see a film about LaDonna Harris and learned about how she educated people in Washington, or when she talked about this lawmaker who basically said, can you people still vote? What's the reaction with the youth you work with?
From what I've seen in my point of view is generally it tends to be sort of shock at first, just because they can't really comprehend that an Indian person could actually be a person of power, of authority, of, you know, to influence decision makers, you know, because not to their fault, but it's like they've just never seen this. There's no role models. There's nothing for them to really look up to and say, oh, wow, I can do that or I can do that. So when you're showing them stuff like this, you're really awakening them and ideally, you know, hopefully inspiring them to understand that, hey, you know, you can do this, you can be that. Even if it's just in your own household, even if you're just the one that's, hey, you know what, I'm going to be the one that promotes culture in my household. Because what's happened with a lot of the youth is it's their parents and their parents' parents who lost the culture, obviously because they were forced to lose it. You know, a lot of the boarding schools took that away. So there's a whole generation of parents raising their kids that the parents don't even know the culture. Mm. So when there's no culture in the home, if the kids don't know where to go, you know, they're just lost. And like I was saying earlier, you know, they're going to identify with other cultures. Even on the reservation, you know, I did a feature documentary a few years back entitled The Ghost Riders, which was about a sacred horse ride on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation, where the ride honors the ancestors who were massacred at Wounded Knee. And what the ride does is it takes the youth and puts them on horseback for 2 weeks in the middle of winter. And I don't know if you've been in South Dakota in winter, but, you know, a minus 20 day is expected and the norm. And these kids ride for 2 weeks. And each day they're talked to and they're told about the ancestors. They're told about the culture. They're told about themselves and what to expect of themselves and who they are. And it was just a really amazing journey to watch these kids begin it and end it and really see the transformation, you know. So I think, you know, we just need more films like this. Like Julie was saying, you know, this medium is really the medium now that we need to take advantage of.
Yeah.
And tell these stories so that these youth can understand that, hey, you know, there are people like LaDonna out there and they can be the next LaDonna.
LaDonna, in the film, you said that some of the most rewarding work that you've done to date has been with Native youth. What have your experiences been like when they learn about what you went through and just Native American history?
Well, we presently have a program called the Ambassadors Program, which is a leadership, but we don't like the term leadership because that means you're above someone else, that you have control over people. And so we don't want them to, because that's against Indian values. And so we called it the Ambassadors Program. But when our first session is to, as Charlie Loha used to say, that we have to open our raincoats to each other and talk about our the pain that some of them have went through. It's just amazing that they survived it. And these are 25 to 35-year-old people, young adults who are showing leadership in their own communities, and they're selected by people around the country to participate in the program. And now we have gone international, but we found that we do a lot of talking about their culture. They have to know their culture and talk about it and their relationship to their family and their tribe. And it's fascinating. There's lots of tears shed sometimes, and because it's very emotional to talk about what happened to you as a youth. And I just wanted to say about to Vincent too that I really admire his work, because that's one of the issues that I took up during Johnson administration. Mm-hmm. That you know, relocation was another form of terminating tribes from their culture. And so those people that have lived in the cities, we're now getting to third generations, I assume, that it was a federal program to send people out to the cities, just, you know, straight from the reservation.
And LaDonna, hold that thought. We're going to take a quick break. We're
all
speaking
right
with, no, it's fine, LaDonna Harris, who is in the documentary LaDonna Harris Indian 101, and Vincent Blackhot Amat. We're talking about the Indian Film Festival. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to Local Public Radio, KALW San Francisco. There's lots of ways to join in the conversation today. On the phone, 866-798-8255. It's toll-free, 866-798-TALK. Or you can send an email, question, or comment to feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock, it's the BBC's World Have Your Say. At noon, from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco, Bina. And then this afternoon at 1, David LaTulipe hosts KALW's weekly magazine of Most Things Culturally Considered. It's open air. That's this afternoon at 1. Here on 91.7 FM, KALW, San Francisco, local public radio.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, it's our media roundtable. We'll be discussing media coverage of tax cuts and the governor's race in Kansas, the presidential elections in Brazil, and the effects of austerity in the UK. How are economic policies being covered and determining elections? You'll definitely want to tune in for that because what's happening in Kansas is fascinating. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today we are talking about the 39th annual American Indian Film Festival. Kicks off Saturday in San Francisco, and you can find more information at yourcallradio.org. I love the documentaries, but there's shorts, there's features, so many amazing films, including LaDonna Harris Indian 101. It's about today's guest, LaDonna Harris, a Comanche activist and national civil rights leader. In the 60s and early 70s, she educated members of Congress about Native American issues, and she helped to introduce programs and legislation affecting tribal land return claims, improving education and health care for Native Americans, ending job discrimination, and protecting environmental resources for tribes. Today, she's founder and president of Americans for Indian Opportunity, and she has an ambassador's program working with youth. And I hope you can see this film. Indian 101 shows Monday, November 3rd at 7 p.m. at the AMC Metreon on 4th Street. And Indian Health Center, Culture is Prevention, screens Tuesday, November 4th at noon. Vincent Blackhot Amat is the director of this film. It focuses on the challenges facing Native youth. And if you'd like to join us, if you have a question for today's guests, and if you have comments about the power of films to really look at Native American history, and then also to deal with issues that we're dealing with today. How do youth connect with their culture? How are people dealing with these mascot issues? We'd love to hear from you. If you saw a film that opened your eyes about an issue or maybe changed your opinion, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. Or if you have a question for our guests, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. So, LaDonna, before the break, you were talking about the relocation programs, and there's some really amazing footage in the film showing Indians who were put on buses across the country and sent to big cities, told that, yes, programs will be waiting for you, you'll be able to find a job, but in many cases, that just wasn't true.
That's so, and there was the suicide rate of people that were sent to those cities. My relatives were sent to Detroit to work in the automobile factories, but I think the majority of them were sent to California. Mm. And that's why California has the largest Indian population in the United States, because of that urban sending Indians to urban centers for jobs. The government would pay for it for a year, and then they just forgot them. And that they were supposed to become the citizens of that town instead of keeping connected. I think it must be part of that old philosophy of getting us to get rid of our culture. It was to other people of color are integrated into American society, but Native Americans are meant to move into the assimilate into American culture, so that we would give up our Indian ways, our cultural ways, and be assimilated in. And it never took, even though they did that. And most of the angry young men that was part of the AIM movement was from the urban centers, because they needed their identity. Mm. That's what the work that Vincent is doing is so important.
Right, because in the film, it shows that a lot of people from small communities across the country who were sent to large cities against their will, they were the, quote, forgotten Indians. And it was those Indians who became pretty hardcore activists, because they arrived in these cities and there was nothing there, and they became really angry, and then they channeled that anger into activism.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And have reason to be angry or be hurt or lost. They're lost. They were lost, and it's just as Vincent said, and what he's doing is helping them come back to who they are and have the sense of identity and belonging, because tribal communities are so it's so important to be connected. That's why I just admire what he's doing.
Well, thank you, LaDonna. And, yeah, I mean, that's really, you know, you hit it right on the head when you just said, you know, I came up with a sort of catchphrase, design thing when I was working with the Indian Health Center, and which was, connected to my ancestors. And, we did some shirts and just some cool posters and stuff that would just really get the youth to identify with that and things that they could, design elements that they could sort of, because a lot of them are, kind of into that skateboard culture and, just that urban kind of artistic influence. So we wanted to speak with them and not to them, because that's the other challenge is, with the youth now, it's like, I don't want to hear this, I don't want to hear that. But if you're speaking with them, they don't feel like they're being told or they don't feel like they're being sold a bill of goods or something that they have to do. You're just explaining to them, hey, this is who you are. And it all comes down to pride, be proud of who you are. And the problem is because a lot of them didn't want to feel proud to be that. They wanted to be, in the Latino culture. They wanted to be in the African-American culture because African-American had, the hip-hop and this. And they wanted to feel like, hey, that's cool. I feel good being that.
Well, the other thing that's interesting, and I always bring this up whenever we do shows about Native Americans, there's such a strong conversation in this country right now about race, but Native Americans are almost always left out of that conversation. It's African Americans, Latinos, Asians, and that's pretty much it, right? I mean, even when you look at statistics about whatever it is, housing, food, education, Native Americans are almost always not included in those studies.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, here's an interesting thing. I'm a member of the Directors Guild of America, and every year they put out a minority statistics in terms of in front of the camera and behind the camera on all productions, film, TV, commercials, what have you. And they just do a study, and they say, because they want to track the growth. And it says African-American, Hispanic, and then women, and you see this growth each year within every minority group, except at the very bottom it says Native American, and every year it's like 1%, 1%, 1%,
1%.
And those 1%, unfortunately, are the classic stereotypical, what is it, the Noah mystic Indian, yeah, where the flute music comes on, the minute he steps onto the screen, and it's like,
with
oh,
the smoke box.
And it's like, oh, I have a vision, and it's like, that's the 1% that we're getting in the media and the mainstream, so it's important that other filmmakers, not just myself, but keep at it.
Well, and I'm curious to know, what do you both think about this mascot debate? Because that is bringing an issue that doesn't have to do with alcohol or casinos into the mainstream. LaDonna, what do you think of that debate?
Well, back in the 60s, when we were still working, we were beginning to work on the issue. We did get some compromise from the Washington team. We went to their attorney, who I knew personally, and we talked to him about it, because it's a negative image for our children. We're either the noble savage or the poor low Indian, and there's the two stereotypes that just keep coming back. And so when we tried to get it changed way back in the 60s, mid-60s, and they said, well, they had just changed their logo and they'd invested so much and blah, blah, blah. And so, but they did, people may not know this, but they had these, their pom-pom girls, the cheerleaders, were in skimpy little buckskin-looking things. So they did away with them, and they changed some of the words in their fight song that was terrible. And so we did, and they also had summer sessions for some of the Indian kids to come up and play with the team. But that was all we got out of it. They didn't change the name. And so I'm proud of people. My own tribe just sent a busload down to Dallas for the for the team playing the Cowboys, Washington team playing the Cowboys. And now that the sports announcers and others are changing, because it's just one of those other layers of things of trying to find one's identity. And then if, you know, no other group of people are, if you'd use that term with any other group of people, they would be insulted to be a mascot where you have animals and, you know, Vikings or some, you know, some past, even past things are hard to take. But if you used any, used it like with Latinos or African Americans or Jews or anyone else, you'd be run out of the country. Mm. But only with the Native Americans could they, and I think they honestly feel they're doing that, some of them. But once they're told, you think they could change their mind. And now you see the sports broadcasters using the term the Washington team, and many of them, which I really want to compliment them for doing, because that does make a difference, particularly the African Americans who know what it's like to be, have derogatory terms to them, because it hurts our children psychologically. There is an effect on our children lowering their self-esteem, and because that they would be a mascot. We had, in Oklahoma, I'll just quickly tell you this, Oklahoma, we had Little Red dance at the halftime, and someone would dress up like an Indian and dance at the halftime, and they didn't have but a handful of students at the time. So they went to the new president, and he changed it, and it caused a big political issue in the state. But they did get rid of him, and one of my colleagues said, well, what they should have had is a Little Redneck dance at halftime rather than a Little Red dancing. So it just kind of, after that experience and then going to Washington, we tried to do that in Washington early on. So I compliment the people that are joining the boycott and making a difference. The Osage Tribe has cut off services from the Federal Express and trying to have some impact on it, some financial impact on it. And some of the kind of exploitation of some of the tribes of saying, we'll buy your art if you come to set in our auditorium, so that there'll be one or two Indians that would really look like they're supporting that. So it's very harmful to the community.
We have an email from Sally in Tiburon who says, 35 years ago when I was doing civil rights work, I started boycotting watching the Washington Redskins, our nation's capital, using a racist name. Would we have tolerated a team called the Atlanta Blackskins? Our Indians are second-class citizens, even among the discriminated minority. Well, thank you for the email, Sally. Today, we are talking about the American Indian Film Festival. It's the 39th year, kicking off this Saturday in San Francisco. A lot of great films, documentaries, features, focusing on a wide range of issues. And today, we are joined by LaDonna Harris, who is the star of the documentary LaDonna Harris, Indian 101. She's a Comanche activist and national civil rights leader. In the 60s, she educated members of Congress about Native American issues. Many of these members of Congress really didn't know much about tribal issues and so many other issues. She worked on land return claims, healthcare, education, ending job discrimination, protecting environmental resources for tribes. LaDonna is president of Americans for Indian Opportunity. She runs the Ambassadors Program with Indian Youth. And I hope you can see this film. It's a great film. LaDonna Harris, Indian 101, shows Monday, November 3rd at 7 p.m. at the AMC Metreon on 4th Street, downtown San Francisco. We're also joined by Vincent Blackhot Amat, director of the film Indian Health Center, Culture is Prevention. It's about challenges facing Native youth. And I should say that Indian Health Center is in Santa Clara.
Yes.
And Vincent's film will be shown Tuesday, November 4th at noon. And if you'd like to join us, if you have any questions for LaDonna or Vincent, if you work with Native youth, if you'd like to talk about the program you work with, if any film really affected you, if you've seen something about Native American history, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from William in Belvedere. Hi, William. Welcome to the show.
Yes. Thank you very much. The guests have given appropriately, a lot of attention to the past of Native Americans, what their culture was like, etc. In terms of the image that people have, I'm speaking in California particularly, because that's where I am, I don't know so much elsewhere, of what, how Indians are projected at this time, Native Americans are projected at this time. The main awareness that I, for instance, in this election year have is Indian, what are called Indian gaming casinos. Every election, there's something about Indian gaming casinos on the ballot. And I wondered whether that, you might say, emphasis in the public mind, because it keeps coming up, has an effect on the way in which non-Native Americans may see Native Americans.
Well, Vincent, you live in California. Do you want to take that one first?
I'll try.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly can't speak for, you know, all the casinos and all the tribes across California, because there are so many now and so many casinos.
Yeah.
I guess, you know, on one hand, yeah, I mean, I hear a lot of people that are like, well, you know, they're all rich now and, you know, they're all, they've all got their casinos. And so I don't know. It is kind of a touchy subject. And when it first started happening, it was like, wow, this is great. You know, now finally, you know, a lot of reservations, a lot of tribes are, you know, are kind of getting back what was taken from them. And then, yeah, now it's, I don't know, it's kind of turned into, you know, I don't know. I mean, I hear a lot of different stories from a lot of different tribes just about now. It's become a new political struggle and, you know, some infighting going on. But certainly, I you know, I'm no expert on it, and I can only speak of just things that I've heard.
Do you think that the casino issue overshadows these other issues that we're talking about?
I think, unfortunately, it does, at least, like the caller was saying, at least definitely here in California, because
yeah,
there's so many, and they seem to be popping up, like, you know, every 6 months there's a new one,
right,
new casino. So I definitely think that here in California, everyone now kind of sees the native people as like, oh, wow, they all got casinos now.
And LaDonna, just to let you know, on Election Day, we're voting in California on Proposition 48, which would ratify gaming compacts between California and two tribes. If the proposition goes through, it would allow the North Fork tribe to build a casino in the Central Valley. What are your thoughts on this issue?
Well, first of all, you have to know the history of the treatment of Indians in California. It's just been notorious. The Spanish enslaved them, and then the gold rush killed them all till they were just they're very small communities. They're not like other tribes, and they weren't treated like other tribes even after the United States came in. And they didn't have the same rights. They were under state law for years and years, and up until the 80s or in the 90s, actually, did they have full governing rights. They were kind of under the state jurisdiction, so that they've had probably I don't know who has the worst, you know, I hate to say, but their treatment has been so notoriously bad, and that finally that they function like tribal governments should. They have the full authority of their people and their lands, which are very small compared to the rest of the United States. So I just admire the fact that they could pull themselves up from what they have gone through to this present economic development. I'm not personally for gaming as a way of funding your government, but it seemed to be the only thing that worked. The U.S. government tried several different things, but they always imposed it on us. Well, the gaming situation is that the tribes decide. And it's not the ultimate way, but they needed a head start. And all the ones that I know of, they first think of their children. The children have scholarships from cradle to the grave. Those monies don't go to an individual like it does Donald Trump or someone like that. It goes to all the people of that tribe, and they're entitled to scholarships. The elders have programs. They have food programs for the elders. They take them on trips. They care about them, and they have wonderful health programs for the whole community, and majority of them do. I don't know about the new ones that are trying to get it, but they see that how the other tribes have developed, and I guess these ones that are on the ballot now are trying to achieve a similar economic goal. But you know, we say that this is just a stepping stone so they can diversify after they get enough income, because the dollar never turns over on the reservation like any other community, so they had to get something started, and it started in Florida and then spread across the country. But you really should know about the history of the California Indians. Mm-hmm. Remember, I can't remember his name now, but there was just one person left. All of the rest of his tribe was murdered by people coming in from Gold Rush, and he lived in the museum. He was kind of a museum piece. When I read that book, I just cried. I can't think of his name.
I think that was Ishii?
Yeah, Ishii. Read Ishii. Maybe you'll get a California public will get some idea of what Indians went through.
Mm. So important. We did a show about that last year, I believe, but we should do another show about the casinos. Because just quickly, when you look at why they chose casinos, they couldn't get capital for wineries, for example, for development, for malls. But Las Vegas came running and said, we've got the capital for you. Why don't you start casinos? That's also not widely known.
That's right. And the tribe owns it collectively. Every person that's a member of that tribe owns it. It's not individuals. Of course, they, you know, depending on how successful those particular gaming institutions, my tribe has one. They have two small ones, and it's nothing like what the because we don't have the population that California does.
Mm.
So that theirs is becoming quite successful because they have a population. But it's going, you know, gaming's going slowly die out too. So we want to be change into other industries. And you see that happening throughout Oklahoma and New Mexico, particularly where I live,
right,
in most of my time now.
Well, thank you for calling in, William. We've got a number of callers on the line. Let's try to get to as many as we can before we have to end here. Let's go to Martine in Bolinas. Hi, Martine.
Hi. Thank you so much. I am of Algonquin descent through my maternal grandmother, and want to thank you for all the work you're doing and everything that's going on out there that's so positive and hopeful. And what I'm questioning right now is the use of the term Indian and Native American. I know I have a preference for First Nation people, and I'm wondering how you and others feel about that. I'm just curious in what's going on generally with that.
Vincent, do you have a preference?
You know, this is interesting. I think we could do a whole documentary on that, you know, because you get a lot of people like, oh, well, don't say Indian or don't say. I generally tend to just say Native people, just because I kind of feel like, you know, we were here before it was the Americas, you know, when it was just Turtle Island. So I generally just kind of say Native people. But personally, honestly, I don't really, it doesn't ruffle my feathers if people say Indian or Native American or American Indian. I get what they're saying, but I don't, you know,
yeah.
I maybe LaDonna can.
Oh, I'm the same way, Vincent, because I'm older. I'm 83 years old, and because I'm older, I grew up being called Indian, and that was the term. And so I kind of welcome Native American to try to emphasize, of course, during the Civil Rights Movement, that became more popular with us to distinguish ourselves as within the ethnic groups in the U.S. And so, but now, listen to this, I have to learn a whole new word is, now I'm just gone blank. Vincent, help me. When you talk about Native Americans in Latin America, they're called indigenous.
Oh, indigenous.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I'm having to learn that word as we are becoming international because because Indian in Mexico and Central America is used as a derogatory term. And so we're having to change our language when we go and visit in Latin America or throughout the, we're in Japan with the Ainus and with New Zealand with the Maori, so that we have to develop using the term indigenous, and so we have to develop a whole new language around getting out of oppression into I'm looking for the right terms. I'm kind of losing a little bit, but indigenous now is more global, and so that I think we should all learn kind of learned to say indigenous.
Yeah.
That has a whole new mindset, too, that we're indigenous to this continent, to this place.
Right, and it's almost like changing Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples
yes.
Day, right?
I had a vice president, Jean Crawford, who used to say, thank God Columbus wasn't looking for turkey, or we've been called turkeys. So.
All right. Well,
make this joke.
Well, thanks for the call. We have time for one last caller. If you could be brief. Hi, Carla. Welcome to the show.
Just want to thank you for this show. Indigenous people from this continent tend to be a blip on the radar of media, and I just want to hear more and more because. African Americans, just a comparison. I think they assimilated a lot through their music and, you know, coming into the acceptance and appreciation through the music and so on. I've been a little shy in joining with causes, Indigenous people's cause, because I don't know how to approach.
Oh, all right. Well, you know what? Sorry to cut you off, but we only have 30 seconds left. Vincent, what would be the best time to get involved in the cause?
Any time is the best time. And if you know someone or you can reach out, like, you know, there's the Friendship Center in Oakland, which is a great community resource. And everyone always welcomes, you know, everyone with open arms, and you're a part of the family.
Yeah, well, and thank you. I mean, we'll continue doing these shows because we always get such a great reaction. Vincent Blackhot Ahmad is director of the film Indian Health Center, Culture is Prevention. See it Tuesday, November 4th at noon at the AMC Metreon downtown. You can see LaDonna Harris, Indian 101, Monday night at 7 o'clock. LaDonna Harris is the star of the film. She's done such amazing work as a Comanche activist and civil rights leader. And thank you both so much for joining us.
You're welcome, Rose. Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you, Rose. Thanks for doing what you do to just promote the community.
Thank you. And thanks to you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. On the next Your Call, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. This week, we'll discuss coverage of tax cuts and the governor's race in Kansas, the presidential elections in Brazil, and the effects of austerity in the UK. How are economic policies and tax cuts being covered and determining elections? We'll be joined by The Guardian's Mary O'Hara, Topeka Capital Journalist Tim Carpenter, and freelance journalist Mauricio Savarese joins us from Brazil. Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Becca Hoekstra produces the show. Malihe Razazan is senior producer, and Matt Martin is the executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.